Hey everyone, this is Devendra here. I just wanted to let you all know we're not going to have a normal episode because, hey, it's Thanksgiving week here in America, and I hope all of our listeners in the U.S. are celebrating safely at home. Sherlyn and I will be out the days we normally record the show, but I did have an interview with Nicolas Doucet, the creative director of Team Asobi, Sony's team behind Astro's Playroom on the PlayStation 5. And I was really excited to chat with him about this game in particular because it's bundled with every console, so every PS5 owner will be playing it at some point. And it's also a great example of all the new technology Sony put into its DualSense controller. So things like the crazy good haptics and the triggers that you can actually articulate in many ways and, you know, feel resistance. Astro's Playroom, I think, is a really good example of what next-gen haptics could be. And I'm hoping it's a sign of how other developers could end up using Sony's controller. If you've been enjoying the show, please make sure you've subscribed to the Engadget podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes because that's always super helpful. And hey, you can email us at podcast@engadget.com. Typically, we also record the show live on Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. That's not happening for Thanksgiving, but we will be back next week for something special with Sherlyn, so be sure to check that out. Now, on to the interview. Can I have you just say your name and your title just for the recording?
Yep. My name is Nicolas Doucet. I'm the creative director at Team Asobi over in Japan.
Thank you so much for chatting with us, Nicolas. I do have to say, for me, it feels like Astrobot has quickly become a very prominent mascot for Sony. And with PSVR, it almost felt like it was a great introduction to VR platforming. Are you guys viewing Astrobot as that sort of introduction to the DualSense controller? Because that's how I'm reading it.
It's an interesting conversation, actually, how Astro came to be inside this pre-install. So maybe I'll give you a little bit of background on that, because
sure.
I think it makes it for an interesting kind of story. So, as you know, like, we're based in Japan, and the hardware engineering is also in Japan. And so we have this kind of old relationship of collaboration with the team where, you know, those guys like come up with these mechanical features that go inside the controllers. And of course, they have a good kind of hunch for what might be a really good thing for the future in games. But, you know, their core kind of, you know, discipline is mechanical engineering. And so what's really interesting, because we are so close to each other, we're able to take some early prototypes of the controllers. And at the time, you know, they don't look like the final DualSense. You know, they look like this kind of big controllers with lots of kind of cables and stuff sticking out. And at the point, at the beginning, you know, the form factor isn't really the point. It's about having all of these features and whether they are usable inside the game and they can make an experience better, right? So we take this over to our studio and we spend some time actually, really kind of rapidly prototyping some gameplay mechanics. And we do those on purpose without much, care for graphics and things like that. It's all about kind of the gameplay and, you know, how it feels. Yeah. And these demos can be really, really small. For example, for the adaptive triggers early on, the first thing we did was just shooting range, where you could fire like a pistol, a shotgun, you know, a machine gun, a flamethrower and stuff. And so we could feel all the various kind of expressions that the adaptive trigger and the haptic system together could give. And for the haptic system, we created a demo where you could walk on various surfaces. So it was like a 2D character, so really simple. But the walking on the sand, on the stone, in the water, sliding, all of that was kind of the focus of the demo. And then we showed that back to them. So first, we have our own impression of what's cool. And, you know, some stuff that sounded good on paper doesn't work out. I mean, it's a whole kind of prototyping. Yeah. And then we showed that back to them. And at this point, I'm realizing I'm not answering your question directly. But
no, that's fine. I like the story. Yeah.
And then we take that back to them, and and they go, "Wow, okay, wow, I didn't realize." So you can do this kind of, for example, like one of the first demos we had for the adaptive trigger was also like a little guy on a motorbike, and the motorbike, every time you accelerate it, you could feel like the engine or the acceleration like kicking back inside the controller. So for them, like, he was like, oh, okay, you could use it like that. So then, okay, let us do this adjustment here and there. The haptics here, perhaps, you know, if we can make like the steps stronger. And it makes them think about where it's positioned inside the controller. Do you feel it? Do you get that kind of relationship, that trinity with what you see, what you feel, and what you hear? Does it feel right? So this kind of collaboration is really important because, you know, it goes both ways. And you know, it helps us kind of get better. So at the end of all that, we had 80 tech demos. And I'm saying at the end of all that, it was like probably like a few months, you know, of work. And by the way, the team working on this were made of three guys. And it was on the side to creating our previous game. So Astrobot Rescue Mission was in its kind of finishing phase. And we started, we kicked off that the process with DualSense prototyping. And yeah, and then so we got all of this together. And that was the interesting point. That was the moment where we thought, okay, what do we do with all of this? You know, we historically, we've done some you know, pre-installed titles. And it'd be really great to do to take the best demos. So we had, you know, the gun was one of them. The steps was another. The weather demo was really great. We had the great chainsaw demo, which finally didn't make it together. That was
I can imagine that would feel great. Yeah.
So if whoever's gonna make like a horror game, you know, we can give that, we can give those tips. But you know, you have like the revving of a chainsaw and the cutting through. It felt really good. Like, you know, like it was more like a construction kind of application, but I mean, it was really nice. And so all of that. We thought, okay, we want to do the pre-install because it's a massive privilege, you know, to be able to touch, you know, so many people with the work we did. But this time we're not going to make a collection of mini games because, you know, it would be the most straightforward approach. But in a way, it's kind of okay. It's been done so many times. It's almost like there's an expectation that you're going to be getting like a bunch of tech demos and that's it. So, but we had Astrobot, you know, now finished. And that's what he felt, okay, you know, Astro is a great character and it'd be really great to be able to port him over to PS5. So for us, we had so much kind of convert because, you know, as you said, the character was born in VR and it was the first time making a non-AR or VR game, you know, which is very strange. But yeah. I mean,
for you guys in general, right? This was your first time going outside of VR. Okay.
For our team, So we never had to make, say, a camera, you know, using the right stick. And, you know, a camera can be really difficult to get right and stuff like that. So, but it felt like actually if we can find a way to absorb, almost like Astro would be that magnet, absorbing all of these tech or as many of these tech demos as possible. And if we could make them inside a cohesive experience, it would probably have a lot more value and fun than having a collection of mini games. And that's how we kind of really hung on to this idea of just let's do it around Astro. I think that was the main motivation, is to make something kind of like meaty, cohesive, and homogeneous. But then there's also, you know, the benefit of also, you know, bringing our character across to a wider audience, you know. And so, you know, it was a win-win situation and we really stuck to this. And that's how, you know, Astro ended up being inside the PlayStation 5.
Very cool. Like, was the idea from the beginning to be a launch game that was inside the system, or were you guys ever planning to sell it?
No. The moment we put Astro onto a TV on the TV, if you like.
Right.
At that point, we already knew it was decided that it would be for the purpose of this pre-install game. However, no one ever came to us and sort of like ordered us to do this. We really kind of wanted to, you know. Like I said, it's a privilege you get once in a blue moon, right? To get to make these kind of pre-install games.
That's very cool. Can you talk about your process? Because I'm always interested when creative artists are basically entering uncharted territory because nobody else has really played with these controllers. And for me, just playing Astrobot, I think the moment it launched and the controller just kind of jolts, and it kind of jolted me like the controller itself was grabbing me. And that shocked me because I've never just really felt that in a game before. How did you guys go about deciding, okay, I want to do the weather features. I want to bring in certain things. And was there back and forth? Did they actually change the controllers based on feedback from you guys too?
Right. So the process of putting the game together and the controller together, we're still separated in the sense that after all the demos were done, then the game production begins. At that point, you know, and the hardware team would not touch anything. I wouldn't say like the decisions were of keeping features were made entirely based on our findings, but it does kind of affect the process whereby all of these demos I've mentioned. So we didn't show all 80 to everybody, but we made a selection, and I think there was a selection of the best, maybe like, you know, 12, and we made actually a demo, and the demo was for internal use only. So and it was interesting. A demo would start, you would unzip the title screen. So idea was, you know, the zipping felt like so good as a demo. It was just like zip in and out, and then we took it, and then once you add kind of cloth physics and stuff, there's a whole element of I suppose, like the icing on the cake, which is still important, you know, as a secondary step. And so we took those to the other studios of PlayStation Studios. So we got a feedback from guys at Naughty Dog, Santa Monica, everybody, Guerrilla Games, everybody actually chipped in, and we had this kind of summit where everybody would pass the controller and then have like a big kind of, you know, just forum where everybody would just say, you know, how you would, you know, what kind of feature excited them the most. And then that's the hardware team. We take that back and then decide where to put priority. And by the way, this process also extended to third-party publishers later on,
okay,
you know, where we actually, I can tell you that a year ago, you know, or more than that, you know, some of our partners would have seen the controller and touched the exact same demo. So the motorbike, the guns, you know, the steps, the weather, you know, these were shown, you know, everywhere around the world. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of for the hardware. And then for the game itself, the process of coming up with these ideas. So, there needs to be like a little bit of a spark. So at the beginning, when we get the controller, you know, and there aren't any tech demos at all, we still have some kind of sample. You can see, like, you know, like a graph on the screen, and you can set different kind of, say, hardness to the you know, to the controller. You can say, okay, to simulate like a click, you know, like a gun, and it's just like one click, or simulate like a hard, you know, or so at that point, you know, you can get an idea, and that's when idea starts kind of coming into our heads, and then we do like big brainstorms, and it's literally tons and tons, you know, we do them on post-its, and then one post-it, one idea, and it's just like the walls are full of stuff, and inside of that you would see actually steps, and you see a little guy, you know, steps, and it's just that's all we've written there, and then we'd grab that one and discuss it a little bit and say, so why do you think that would work? And then, you know, sometimes there's very strong reasons. Sometimes it's just like a bit of a crazy test. But, you know, like I was saying earlier, with a lot of these kind of prototyping, you have to go wide on purpose, and you have to explore places where you're not even very confident. The theme sounds really exciting. You're not too sure how you're going to do it, but you got to throw yourself in there, in the unknown, because that's how you're going to come across innovative stuff. And that's how, for example, the step demo came, and then once it's on the screen, then I think then at that point it's unanimous, you know, people play and they're like, wow, you know, then it becomes a case of, okay, this step is better than that one, but overall as a concept, it's in, you know, everybody's sold. So, just classic brainstorming kind of process.
Yeah, excellent. Well, how did it compare to developing Astrobot for VR too? Because I was really interested to see how developers are approaching that as a whole new medium. But it almost feels like this controller is such a significant change. It feels like another medium for console gaming too.
So I would say actually it was surprising. So let's talk about the haptic feedback, for example.
Yeah.
There was some novelty to it in the kind of process, of course. In that, because they are waveform, you know, it's sound based, you know, fundamentally the way you can generate those vibrations. So at the beginning, or gameplay programmers who normally would do the character controls, they would do things like, you know, the quality of a jump, the punching, you know, these kind of actions, actually were the ones doing that as well. So they would do the kind of the feel of the character as you run and stuff. And you would feel the steps on the metal, steps on the plastic. And he got to a really good point, but they actually said, you know, like, if you want that done really to the best effect, you got to ask the professionals. So we got to get the sound guys actually coming in much earlier in the process. And that's perhaps one of the most fundamental changes, whereby before gameplay would have been in place, and then we bring the audio guys to kind of like, you know, enhance. Now they were brought in very early on in that very, very core creation process. And that took some time. But once, you know, once we go used to that process, now it's like, you know, it's like creating anything new for the first time, any AI system, animation system or whatever. It's just another, it's not the way we create, like, you know, the haptic system that the audio guys are kind of in early. So there was a learning curve, of course, but I would say that it's not particularly like more difficult. I wouldn't say it's like a brand new medium. It's more like, you know, you just adapt your techniques. When you talk about VR, you really have to almost like forget everything, you know, and rebuild for VR. Otherwise, you're not going to exploit the medium the best. I think in the case of the DualSense, you could imagine retrofitting the adaptive trigger inside gun games and getting a lot out of it. So it's kind of the retrofitting, I think, has a much better case than you would have for VR. So without reinventing the wheel, I think you can still take advantage of quite a lot of features. And racing games, I could imagine, would be a big one too. And sports game, in fact, you know, we did a demo where you could bounce the ball, and as you bounce the ball, you would really feel the, how did I say, you would feel the texture of the ball. You would feel like how airy it was. You know,
that's
so
crazy.
Like, yeah, so you know, like you know, the skids balls. You know, like the really like you know, they are very very thin plastic and very bouncy, right? You could really feel that was like very light. But then once we put a put the parameters for like a volleyball or basketball, you would feel like more hardness on the bounce, right? And something like that you could apply to, you know, any ball based sport game. So I think yeah, you can get a lot. You can enhance a lot of existing games. Yeah.
Interesting. And you mentioned like, yeah, I guess the haptics are sound wave based. Is it something you said you brought in the sound folks to kind of, you know, help you guys figure some of this out? Is figuring out the haptics more about the sound design type folks, like the people who make, you know, the explosion sounds, or is it coming from the game design side of things too?
You need a good, and it's not just, you know, like audio, I would say. It's
right,
like it's
right.
You need an understanding of the expression you're trying to create, and it is linked to animation too, because the way things move have to be like timed. So as I would say, as a process is kind of very similar to what, you know, audio of course have to be matched to animation and things like that. But in terms of the understanding, there needs to be an understanding for what feels good in terms of controls and reactions in a game. So you know, like I tend to think that anyway, anything that touches the gameplay fundamentally, it has to be understood by everyone in the team. It doesn't matter what discipline you're in, you have to be in tune with that core gameplay. So, in a way, I mean, the team we built, it's kind of like that. It's a small team, but everybody is, I think, is really has his eyes on or their eyes on this element. But I would say that, yeah, a good understanding of, yeah, what feels good in a game is necessary. And that means that whether the audio, you have to understand, you know, the way things look and sound and feel. And if you're a programmer, you have to understand. It's everybody has to be aware of all the other disciplines, if you like. I don't know if I'm answering the question.
That's a good perspective of it. And you mentioned too that there, you know, as you guys were testing all this, third-party developers were involved too. I am wondering how difficult it is to, you know, build for DualSense and to bring in these new game design elements, because are only first-party Sony developers really going to be taking advantage of it? I don't know how much third parties will. Is it that tough to build?
So that's difficult for me to answer. I mean, I've not played enough. Like I said, you know, because you can retrofit so many of those of the features in existing games, you can do a lot to enhance whatever was there before. So that's already like covered almost. You know, I would say like, you know, not for free. You know, there's always going to be some investment, but I mean, it's fairly easy. To build something from scratch, then I think it's always the same, you know, conversation. It's like, you know, if you have the chance of building something for the first time and you can do it around the controller, perhaps you can do things that are kind of, you know, really, and that people have never seen before. So I think both patterns exist, you know, the kind of like really...
I know there's no talk of like what's next for VR for Sony at least, but I would say theoretically, this feels like a controller that would be really useful for VR experiences. Is your mind just swimming with possibilities with what you guys could do with this stuff, you know, down the line?
Well, you know, there's so many like cool features with this DualSense. I mean, it's you know, if you consider like the amount of expressions. I mean, because we've only scratched the surface. I mean, that's another thing is, I'm really hoping that whatever we make next. I mean, you know, we know there's more to it. That's for sure. And I would love to be 2 or 3 years. That's certainly the goal we're going to set to ourselves. 2 or 3 years into the future, when we look back at today, we should feel like, hey, that first, you know, implementation was really cool, really magical. But today we do even better stuff. Yeah, that would be great. Because I think that would also prove, and that's where I think it's going to go, is that this technology has got legs to evolve throughout the life cycle. I think it's not one of those things that you do once and that's it. I think we're going to continue exploring and finding new things and more and refining it in ways that maybe today we just haven't thought of yet.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Are there any other major hardware highlights that you guys implemented for just the PS5? Because I'm seeing it looks like it's 4K 60fps to me. Yep. I think I'm seeing ray tracing. Like any really cool things you want to shout out?
Yeah, so yes, 4K 60, mm-hmm. so the game is running throughout. That was something that, you know, we really wanted to do. I wouldn't say, you know, like graphically speaking, it's the most, you know, it's never been or you know, if you look at the graphic prowess, you know, if you look over at Spider-Man or Demon's Souls, I think these games are more suited for that. However, you know, it's still kind of quite a lot of detail. And yes, there is a ray tracing inside our global illumination system. And the other thing is the SSD. So, you know, like the game hasn't been built. You know, we haven't done anything specifically around the SSD in terms of game design, but the game is built traditionally. However, it's load so fast. I mean, I've got a bit of a funny story for you, but
yeah.
Whenever you die in Astro Bot, you know, you the screen actually there's the closes and then there's a little kind of astral face and then you respawn again. Actually, originally, the game was set to be as fast as possible, and it was so fast that actually I've asked the team to put a pause in there because, you know, like when you play one of these games, when you die, you need to have a moment where you collect your thoughts and then you try again, right? And it's important in a heartbeat of an experience. But it was so fast. It was really frenetic. You would be back in the action and you would be like literally no pause.
Wow.
So we actually put that delay on purpose. So what you see there isn't a loading time. It's actually an intentional pause to just calm down things. So that SSD is really, really amazing. And what would be great would be kind of to follow in the tracks of what the Insomniac guys are doing. Where, you know, really the experience is thought to be around the SSD, you know, the way you kind of jump through portals in, Ratchet and Clank. When we saw that, we thought, wow, of course,
yeah.
You know, they had this great idea around the hardware. That would be a great area to explore where we can actually build the entire game around this amazing loading. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Anything else you want to call out about the game or your experience building it so far? I'm sure you're just super busy at this point.
No, I'm just really hoping that people are going to love it. You know, it's going to be the day one experience of, you know, like many, many people. And, you know, that means like, you know, tech lovers at the beginning, but over the course of time, it's going to have a different meaning too, because, you know, different people are going to have, you know, that their own day one experience. I'm just hoping that everybody finds something to it, you know, whether it's the tech, whether it's the tributes to PlayStation, you know, the little Easter eggs we've been putting everywhere. Or just,
oh, they're so much fun. Yeah.
Or just, you know, the platforming. And, you know, hopefully, like, you know, Astro is going to be connecting with people's hearts. And that's it. Really?
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us, Nicholas.
Thank you.
Good luck with the launch. And I'm sure you're polishing all sorts of things at this point.
Thank you so much.